Georgian violinist Lisa Badiashvili says when she gets a chance to perform with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, it's just so much fun. It's like a big family, almost like you're celebrating Christmas, because they just love making music so much. And that was the experience she had when she made this new recording with them and Yannick Nevzaves again. It's called Visions of Prokofiev. Enjoy. So, Lisa, tell me, why did you want to make this recording celebrating music of Prokofiev?
Well, I've been playing Prokofiev's music since my childhood. The first violin concerto I performed for the first time at age of 13, which is quite young for this kind of music because it's very theatrical. You need to be able to project kind of very specific characters from this music. And since then, Prokofiev has been really part of my musical life. I have performed first and second violin concerto, and I think that this is one of the most spectacular composers of 20th century through his fantasy, through his ability to describe so many things and so many different visions that he has had in his life. And this was one of the reasons, and the other reason because certainly I've dreamt to record with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe and Yannick Nevzaves. This combination for me is really a big dream, and it was an occasion to actually bring together music of Prokofiev on the CD with these fantastic partners.
Well, since you brought up the ensemble, I want to ask you a question about them very quickly. I was reading how about 20 years ago you had a chance to see Michael Jackson in concert, and that experience that you had watching him perform on the stage, you have compared to working with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe and Yannick Nevzaves again. Could you explain that a little bit, please?
Well, I didn't really compare these two experiences, but what I wanted to say, for me, in classical music, the most incredible experience that I would never forget, and I would remember all the details about including me in this kind of experience, was the performance with Chamber Orchestra of Europe and Yannick Nevzaves, because there was some sort of magic happening on the day, on the stage, that was very memorable for me. And on the other hand, if I had to remember any concert experience of me as a listener, I had chosen Michael Jackson because simply that was such a huge impact that he has made on me in this stadium that I was listening to. And I just couldn't understand how one single person, of course with everything around, but still one person could project such an energy and such an incredible aura towards all these 70 or 80,000 people that were listening to them. For me, it's really it doesn't matter whether it's pop or jazz or classical music. It's just somebody who has the ability to give you so much energy as a listener. And that was also a memorable experience for me.
Have you taken anything from that experience, like his ability to command the attention of the audience or his passion for the music? Are these things that you try to apply as well when you perform?
No, I'm not trying to compete with that, because I think this is a matter of personality, the matter of what you, how you were raised and everything. I think each of us, all artists, have their own voice and their own way to project, and some have more and the others have less, and it really depends, and it sometimes can also depend on the repertoire that you're playing. Some of the works you feel kind of that you can really speak with, and others less. But I think that what really matters is to believe that whatever piece we play, if it goes through our soul and our mind, it will be personalized. And this is why, for me, the interpretation, it is more about bringing myself into the music and my world, or bringing the music into my world and out again, rather than making up the ideas and trying to make it a little more interesting on the paper.
Your professor at Hamburg, Mark Lubotsky, one of your first teachers, had had the opportunity to study with the legendary violinist David Oistrakh. I'm wondering if you know what his intimate ties were to this work through that experience that he had with David Oistrakh.
Yes, certainly, especially with music of Prokofiev, Shnetke, Shostakovich. I have had lots of advice for him. It was very helpful. It was also helpful to have lived in the Soviet Union and kind of know that area of the world with my own experiences. And I've seen so many things with my own eyes. And you always connect the happenings of certain places with the culture of that place. But nevertheless, I think that especially with the music of Prokofiev, I have kind of come out from that typical Soviet understanding and a Soviet school of playing that music, because I think that Prokofiev is does not belong to one part of the world, but he's a really totally global composer, somebody who was so influenced by the Western culture, the French, American, all his trips that he made. So for me, you know, he's as close to Debussy and all the other great composers in Europe than to the Russian way of composing.
Now, I know that you've said that Prokofiev, he sort of intermingled the East and the West, as you just said. Can you describe how we hear that in the first violin concerto? How is that evident there?
Well, I think the colors that he is proposing to us, there's something that was quite unique, and he was one of the first composers that actually really, you know, decided to change the attitude and have this incredibly angelic and very tender moments in the first violin concerto in the beginning and also in the end. He has incredibly sweet moments in the concerto, but also lots of grotesque. And joking. And also some brutal parts. And he has so much material in one work, and the work changes the character very, very quickly from one moment of the tenderness, and you go to something completely different. And I think that's also quite a challenge to be able to switch on and off. And I think that you can very clearly hear his close ties to ballet, close ties to everything what is theatrical, and simply something that music that tells us stories.
Is there a story that you have in your mind when you're playing that first violin concerto?
Well, it doesn't have to be a clear story, but it has to be some imagination. And imagination in music in general is very, very important, because somehow we have to be able to express ourselves. And for that, we need to have something in our mind. It can be a color, it can be a figure, it can be just a person. And I think that happens. That is quite easy with Prokofiev to have that, because he's so describing all these characters that you can very easily imagine a person, a personality behind each section.
So do you have a section that you would like to talk a little bit more about that maybe is a favorite for you, or there's a section within a section, a passage or something that every time you play it, it's maybe it resonates something really special within you?
Yeah. For example, there are many, but I would say the first violin concerto, the beginning of the last movement, the third movement, which starts with a solo of bassoon. which is kind of a mixture of something a little bit stubborn and grotesque, and it is followed by the theme of the violin. Which is one of the most beautiful, most sensitive themes that you can imagine. And there is some sort of awkwardness in it. This mixture of bassoon and violin with a very rhythmical accompaniment of the orchestra, which actually is absolutely unique, because there are so many different and complex feelings in this very simple theme. I think this is really one of my favorite places in all his music.
Now, I know the first violin concerto is a cornerstone of your repertoire, and it has been for many, many years. How does the second violin concerto fit into your repertoire?
Yes, I've learned this concerto much later, so I was already in the middle of my studies, and I find it is a more kind of typical Prokofiev music. That's something that would be closer to his later works. And it is quite complex because, again, it's very sectional. In the first movement, you have a lot of different material that you have to bring together, and I think it's quite a challenge to keep it together. But of course, the centerpiece, the center moment of this concerto is the second movement, which is obviously a love theme. And it's quite popular because it's something that you can recall also other love themes of Prokofiev from, for example, from Romeo and Juliet. And the second violin concerto certainly is also maybe a bit more complete because it's longer and it has more material. So, and technically also very challenging. For the orchestra, and this is it's Prokofiev in a completely different time of his life, which you can also hear the difference from the first and the second one, how much he has gone into different ways and he got inspired by lots of different experiences.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your father, Tomas, who created three arrangements on this recording of other works by Prokofiev, which come from his ballets and one is from an opera. Can you tell me a little bit about him? I know he was your first teacher, and I'm curious if there's something perhaps that you learned from him, either as a teacher or maybe just as your dad, that still really resonates with you today.
It's very interesting because people have an imagination of the old Soviet school as some, you know, if parents were teaching their kids, they were really behind and making sure that they would practice so many hours and being very strict with them and severe. But my father was quite the opposite. He was an active violinist. He was playing in the string quartet. And he is still playing in the same string quartet since 50 years. He's been part of that group, and he used to be teacher. And he was simply, for me, one of my musical heroes. And I asked him to become my teacher. And he started teaching me, and he became my beloved musical friend, a parent that I trusted so much. Each of his opinions were so interesting and still are. But he's a very shy person, so I always have to go towards him and ask him for his ideas. And lately he's been arranging works, not only for me, also for other people, especially those small works that are so beautiful and not really written for violin and orchestra, but, you know, I really wanted to bring them in a particular combination with other big concertos. So our collaboration started already many years ago when I recorded the Georgian miniatures of Sulhan Sinsadze, and then later also on my next recording of Echoes of Time, I performed also one piece that he arranged, and then again now with Prokofiev. It's great because you have these small works that are so popular and that bring actually also people closer to other music of Prokofiev. This is less known because these three, let's say, tunes are really works that almost everybody has heard already. And I think it's nice to show Prokofiev from all different sides, and the variety of his fantasy was just limitless.
Did your father create these arrangements for you then?
Yes, he did.
Oh, wonderful. So would you tell me a little bit about each of these? I kind of look at them as maybe like encore pieces or something, because like you said, they are very familiar and they would really please the audience as you're wrapping up an evening. But maybe you envision them in a different way.
Well, the theme of Dance of the Night from the Romeo and Juliet is, of course, very much known to the broad audience. And this, there is already an arrangement for violin and piano, so it has been already played in this kind of a chamber music version. But this is this time the first time that it's been played with violin and orchestra. The other one is one of the waltzes from the Cinderella. It's very beautiful, and it's very nicely made for violin. I think sound-wise it goes very well with the character of the piece. And the last one is from the opera Love for Three Oranges. The Grand March, which is, it's only less than 2 minutes long, but it's really a hit, I would say. And this usually, of course, it's normally played by a huge orchestra. And this time it was a small arrangement, which I also love to play as an encore or as a separate piece in the program.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your role as a parent, because I know that your parents were very influential to you as a young musician growing up, and you initially had taken a little bit different approach when your kids were younger, and I'm wondering if that's changed at all. Have they been finding their way to music?
Yes, but you know, I don't think that every child of a musician has to become a musician. I really think that life should show how much passion and how much devotion there is for music, because if you become a professional musician, it has to be very clearly a huge passion for it, because you need to spend a lot of time every day practicing and just being conscious about being a musician already at a very young age. And with our children, they have been interested in many different things, and they don't particularly feel so close to music that they really want to be active musicians. They do play instruments, but I still think that very likely they will choose another profession also because they will want to show to us that they can do something else, and then we will also be able to get to know the other world, something that we haven't been able to do because we are so actively in the musical world, spending so many hours and most of our life being part of the music. I was thinking I would find it very nice if my kids, you know, find their real passion, something that they can do better than others, and simply find their talent in whatever they want to do.
Yeah, that's always the key, isn't it? Finding their own passion. It's so great. Now, I know that your husband is a professional oboist, and he was at one point in the Chamber Orchestra of Europe. Is that right?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And is that maybe how you met?
No, we met before that. But of course, the period where he played in Chamber Orchestra of Europe, that was very precious because I've always felt that this orchestra was like a big family coming together for Christmas because every time it felt like Christmas, these orchestra members, they are all in different places in Europe. Most of them have different jobs, and then they come to play together for several projects in a year because they love to play together, because they love to see each other and make music together. And every time it feels so different than any other orchestra, because you know that each of them is there for the love of the music, for the love of the music they are going to play that week, particular week. And I think you can hear that also when they're playing, and you can simply hear that devotion.
We are continuing to celebrate Women's History Month here. It's March is Women's History Month. And so I've been asking, especially the women artists with whom I speak, if there might be a woman in your life who has had a big influence on you and your career that you'd like to talk about.
Certainly. And I think of her immediately. It's my teacher, Anna Chumachenko, who I've studied with for 6 or 7 years in Munich Hochschule, and she is a person that it's really hard to describe in two words. It's this generosity and professionalism and kindness together with precision of exactly knowing your student and knowing exactly which direction to give it to each of the personalities that come into your class. And she has not only been the most important teacher of my life, but she's been she is still one of the most important people today for me, because it's just such an incredible gift to have her around and to talk to her sometimes also just about life and just about little things, because I think that there is such an incredible wisdom behind this modest woman that that I've hardly ever seen anywhere else.
A new recording called Visions of Prokofiev with Lisa Badiashvili, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. That's New Classical Tracks. I'm Julia Macher.